So, a 20-year-old girl just won $6 million. And this is because the jury decided the social media algorithms that she grew up with were, well, basically fundamentally defective products.
Yeah, which is a massive ruling.
Right. But at the exact same time, you have clinical researchers from top universities publishing these massive studies showing that the identical underlying AI technology can actually be used to treat clinical depression.
It really sounds like a paradox when you put it that way. I mean, we have this incredibly powerful technology that is simultaneously facing, billion-dollar lawsuits for destroying mental health while also passing rigorous clinical trials for improving it.
Exactly. And for years, we've kind of been stuck in this murky, endless debate about it. Are social media and AI chatbots harming you? Are they helping you? Or is it all just, I don't know, a generational moral panic?
Right, everyone has an opinion on screen time.
Yeah, but based on the fascinating stack of sources we're looking at today, which includes court transcripts, freshly signed state bills, and peer-reviewed clinical studies, that abstract debate is officially over. So our mission today on this deep dive is to unpack this massive coordinated shift that's happening right now at the intersection of technology, law, and mental health.
We're watching a transition happen in real time. I mean, the era of writing op-eds about whether screen time is bad, that's ending. We are moving into a new era of binding state laws, multi-million dollar jury verdicts, and hard clinical benchmarks.
Which is, frankly, wild to see unfold.
It really is. And these forces are converging to dictate exactly how digital products must be built, like right from the ground up. So whether you're a founder building a new app, a clinician treating patients, or just, an everyday user wondering why your digital feeds are about to look and feel dramatically different, we're going to reveal the new legal and technical guardrails that are actively redefining the internet.
Yeah, so let's start by looking at an incredible focal point that's happening in Santa Fe, New Mexico right now. It's this perfect snapshot of where the judicial branch is colliding head-on with the limits of its own power and how the legislative branch is basically rushing in to fill that exact void.
Right, the New Mexico trial.
Yeah, the state of New Mexico v. Meta Platforms Phase 2 bench trial. The state is asking for a staggering $3.7 billion. But they aren't just asking for money. They're demanding a 15-year structural remedy plan.
And if you read the details of this proposed plan, it reads less like a legal settlement and much more like a highly restrictive clinical safety manual dictated straight to a software engineering team.
Okay, so what exactly are they demanding in this manual?
Well, they want the court to order a complete end to the infinite scroll feature for minors. They're demanding strict age verification at sign-up.
Which is a huge technical hurdle on its own.
Oh, absolutely. But it goes further. They want to force the platform to suspend all push notifications during school hours and overnight. They're asking for a hard 90-hour monthly cap on platform time.
Wow, an actual time limit.
Yeah, and perhaps most drastically from a privacy standpoint, they want a rollback of end-to-end encryption for users under 18, specifically so that reports of child exploitation can be visible to law enforcement.
That is a massive list of demands.
Yeah.
And the judge hearing all this, Chief Judge Brian Beachide, he has a reaction that I think is incredibly telling for where we are in this technological moment.
He is openly hesitating. I mean, on the record, Judge Beachide stated he has serious concerns about granting this request. He specifically warned the courtroom that he refuses to become a one-person legislature, judge, and executive branch enforcer.
Right. And I want to pause on the legal mechanism New Mexico is trying to use here because our sources highlight that they're relying on something called the public nuisance doctrine. Now, when I hear public nuisance, my mind immediately goes to like a factory dumping chemicals into a local river or a noisy nightclub keeping a neighborhood awake.
Yeah, exactly. Physical things.
Right. So how does a law meant for a physical nuisance apply to an app on a smartphone?
Well, that is the core of the judge's skepticism right there. The public nuisance doctrine has historically been used for tangible physical issues, pollution, blocking public roads, things that interfere with the general public's right to safe spaces.
Right, shared physical reality.
Exactly. So using it to force a private tech company to completely redesign its digital product, right down to the timing of its push notifications, is a massive stretch of the law. It's an enormous separation of powers question. Judge Beachside is essentially saying that making these kinds of sweeping societal rules is the job of lawmakers, not a single judge in a single courtroom.
Yeah, it's like the judge is being asked to rewrite the building code for the entire internet single-handedly. and he's looking around saying, hey, I'm a referee, not a city planner.
And worse, he's being asked to referee a game where the rule book hasn't even been printed yet. I mean, he's being asked to enforce a standard that doesn't exist in the state statutes.
Which puts him in an impossible position.
It does. But the dynamic changes completely when you zoom out from Santa Fe and look at the rest of the country. Because while this judge is hesitating because he doesn't want to overreach, actual state legislatures are actively and aggressively passing these exact building codes.
Yeah, the sources show an absolute avalanche of legislation. Like, let's look at Iowa. They just passed Senate File 2417. It cleared the state Senate 48-0 and the House 95-0.
Which is pretty unheard of.
Right. It is so rare to see unanimous bipartisan support on literally anything these days. But Republican Governor Kim Reynolds signed it into law, making Iowa the fifth state in just 33 days to pass a conversational AI safety law.
And Connecticut is moving just as fast, by the way. They passed Senate Bill 5 in the House with a vote of 131-17, sending it straight to Democratic Governor Ned Lamont's desk. That makes six states.
So lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are entirely aligned on this.
Exactly. And the crucial thing to understand here is that these laws mandate the exact safety architectures that the New Mexico attorneys were begging the judge to enforce. These new laws require platforms to constantly disclose to minor users when they're talking to an AI. They explicitly prohibit unpredictable rewards designed to addict, and they mandate deep self-harm detection protocols.
Which completely resolves the judge's concern about overreach, right? If the state legislature passes a law saying you can't use unpredictable rewards on minors, the judiciary doesn't have to invent a novel interpretation of the public nuisance doctrine.
Right. The judge just applies the new standard.
Exactly. The math of legitimacy changes entirely. Judges no longer have to act as rogue city planners because bipartisan lawmakers across the country are finally stepping up and doing their jobs. They're codifying the blueprints for a safe internet.
Absolutely.
But you know, that raises a massive question for me. If judges aren't software engineers and state legislatures are made up of politicians, not clinical psychologists, where are they getting these highly specific technical blueprints? Like, how do lawmakers in Iowa or Connecticut know exactly which features are harmful and which ones to ban?
That is the million-dollar question.
Avery.
Or I guess the billion-dollar question.
Right. And to understand that, we have to look at what juries are punishing in civil court versus what clinical studies are praising in medical journals. So let's talk about the Los Angeles verdict.
Yes, the Cayley verdict. This was a bellwether trial, meaning it was a test case intended to set the tone for roughly 1,500 similar pending cases.
The plaintiff was a 20-year-old woman. She's referred to in court as Cayley because the alleged harms began when she was a minor. So she sued Meta and YouTube, and the jury awarded her $6 million. And what stands out in the sources here is that they didn't just find the platforms vaguely harmful. The jury explicitly found them liable for negligent design.
They pinpointed the exact features. They cited the algorithmic engagement optimization, the infinite feeds, the relentless push notifications.
They get very specific.
Very. The jury concluded that these specific design choices caused her severe anxiety, body dysmorphia, and suicidal thoughts, starting from a very young age.
I want to dig into the mechanism of that harm for a second, because we throw around terms like infinite scroll constantly, you know? Like,
yeah.
Why is an infinite feed legally considered a defective design for a minor?
It all comes down to psychological stopping cues. So in the physical world, things have a natural end. You finish a chapter in a book or, you know, a TV episode ends and the credits roll. It gives your brain a moment to pause, assess, and decide to do something else.
A built-in break.
Right. But an infinite scroll intentionally removes all stopping cues. It exploits a minor's still developing prefrontal cortex, which is the part of the brain responsible for impulse control. The jury sought evidence, gained through deep legal discovery into internal corporate documents, that these companies knew this design bypassed a young user's ability to self-regulate, yet they implemented it anyway to maximize engagement.
So the jury looks at internal documents, sees the companies knew the infant scroll was actively hurting kids, and says, that's a defective product, pay $6 million. That makes logical sense.
It does.
But looking at our stack of sources, there is a massive contradiction staring me in the face here. We have this multi-million dollar verdict punishing these companies for their AI algorithms, but there's a study in here, a brand new meta-analysis from a team in Seoul that seems to completely flip the script. They're saying AI chatbots actually help with depression.
They are. The research team out of Yonsei University recently published a major meta-analysis in the journal NPJ Digital Medicine. And to be clear, a meta-analysis isn't just one small experiment. It is a review of all the best available data.
Right, it's the gold standard.
Exactly. They looked at 39 randomized controlled trials encompassing over 15,000 participants. And they found that supervised AI chatbots actually produce a statistically significant clinical benefit for depression and anxiety.
Now, the source mentions a Hedges G of 0.31 for depression. For anyone whose statistics classes are a distant memory, what does that actually mean in the real world? Like, is 0.31 a massive cure or barely a blip?
So Hedges G is just a way to measure the size of an effect across different studies. A score of 0.31 indicates a small but highly reliable positive effect. It's not a miracle cure that's going to replace all human therapy overnight, but it is real, measurable clinical improvement.
Okay.
It's the equivalent of taking the edge off severe symptoms, especially for clinical and subclinical populations who, frankly, might not have access to human care right now.
Wait, hold on. You're telling me the exact same algorithmic AI technology that just cost Meta $6 million for causing severe anxiety and body dysmorphia is suddenly a measurable clinical treatment for depression? That sounds completely contradictory. How can the same underlying tech be a poison and a cure at the same time?
It comes down to what the sources define as the architectural argument. The foundational technology, the large language model, the machine learning, it's neutral. The technology itself isn't the problem. The configuration of that technology is the problem. It is entirely about how the product is designed to operate and what its core objective is.
Okay, break that down for me. What is the difference in configuration between the app Kaylee was using and the app in the Yonsei University study?
Think of it as the difference between a casino and a pharmacy. The platforms Kaylee used were built on an engagement architecture. They were unsupervised, general-purpose consumer products optimized for one single metric, keeping your attention.
Right. Time on site.
Exactly. And to do that, they use something called intermittent reinforcement.
Like a slot machine.
Exactly like a slot machine. Intermittent reinforcement means delivering unpredictable rewards. You pull the lever, swipe down on your screen, and you don't know if you're going to get a boring update, a funny video, or a high-stakes social validation like a bunch of likes on your photo.
Which just hooks you in.
Right. That unpredictability spikes dopamine and creates an addictive behavioral loop. That engagement-optimized configuration produces documented neurological harms, and as we saw in Los Angeles, massive lawsuits.
Because the algorithm's only goal is just keep their eyeballs on the screen, regardless of the psychological toll it takes.
But the chatbots in the meta-analysis were built on a supervised architecture. They were purpose-built mental health tools utilizing established cognitive behavioral therapy protocols. They were deployed in clinical or research settings with user consent, strict guardrails, and oversight.
But totally different parameters.
Fundamentally different. And most importantly, their goal was not to addict the user. They were designed to deliver a specific therapeutic intervention, check in on the patient, and then explicitly encourage the user to log off and engage with the real world.
Ah, so the law and the science are finally recognizing this asymmetry. The tech isn't inherently evil. It's the engagement at all costs architecture that is fundamentally defective.
Yes, and that realization is exactly what bridges the gap between the courtroom and the legislature. State lawmakers look at the $6 million jury verdict against the casino model, and they look at the clinical success of the pharmacy model, and they write laws demanding that companies abandon the casino architecture when dealing with minors.
Okay, but if the configuration is the difference between a successful product that genuinely helps people and a defective product that results in a massive lawsuit,
yeah.
How do tech founders actually prove they're building the safe version? Like, if you're a developer listening to this right now, how do you engineer these newly mandated guardrails?
It starts by looking at the specific, hard constraints written into these new state bills. If you want to stay legally compliant in states like Iowa and Connecticut, your software architecture has to change fundamentally. For example, you must clearly disclose to minor users that they are interacting with an AI, not a human being.
And the sources emphasize that you can't just bury that disclosure once in the terms of service that, you know, nobody actually reads. The law says you have to repeat this disclosure every 3 hours of continuous interaction.
Right. You have to actively break the illusion.
Exactly. Imagine you're deep in a conversation with a companion bot and suddenly a pop-up reminds you, hey, I am a machine. It disrupts that emotional dependency loop.
It does. And furthermore, Connecticut's law introduces something incredibly potent called a private right of action.
What does a private right of action actually mean for the average person using the app?
So normally, if a company violates a state consumer protection law, you have to wait for the state's attorney general to investigate and file a massive lawsuit on behalf of the public. A private right of action bypasses the government entirely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It means a single user who is harmed by a chatbot that violates these safety rules can sue the company directly for up to $1,000 per violation, plus attorney's fees.
That is massive. I mean, as a founder, if you have 1 million active users, a $1,000 penalty per violation isn't just a fine or the cost of doing business. At scale, that is an existential threat to your entire startup. You could literally be sued into bankruptcy by your own user base.
In a matter of days.
Right. So that means you can't just slap a warning label on your app and hope for the best. Founders have to build deep audit logs. They need engineering documentation proving their self-harm protocols trigger when they're supposed to and that their disclosure cadences are firing properly. They need proof that can survive a brutal legal deposition.
And for a long time, the tech industry pushed back against this. Their defense was always, well, it is impossible to measure these things objectively. How do we prove our AI is clinically safe when there's no standardized test for AI empathy or safety?
Right. They argued you can't grade a chatbot the way you grade a math test.
Exactly. But that excuse just evaporated. The sources detail a newly published groundbreaking benchmark called VERAMH. It was created by Spring Health in collaboration with researchers from Berkeley and Yale. It stands for Validation of Ethical and Responsible AI in Mental Health.
This stood out to me as a massive shift in the deep dive because it's the first open source, clinically validated safety evaluation specifically for mental health AI. It's literally an automated test you can run your AI model through.
It is. It grades the AI on 5 distinct clinical dimensions. For example, it tests if the AI confirms risk, meaning if a user subtly hints at self-harm, does the AI catch it and verify the danger?
Which is critical.
Very. It also tests if the AI guides to human care, meaning does it know when to stop trying to help and instead provide a hotline number. And it tests if it follows AI boundaries, ensuring the bot doesn't start hallucinating medical advice. It just isn't qualified to give.
But the crucial part of our sources is the validation study behind VERAMH. Because, you know, how do we know this automated test actually works?
The researchers measured it using something called the Krippendorf Alpha Scale, which is basically a statistical measure of agreement. In the validation study, VERAMH achieved a 0.81 agreement rate with licensed clinicians.
Okay, let's translate that for a second. Why is an agreement rate of 0.81 a big deal in this context?
Because human therapy is highly subjective. If you put 2 licensed human therapists in a room and ask them to evaluate a transcript for safety issues, they don't always agree. In fact, the human inter-rater reliability on this test was 0.77.
Wait, so the automated AI judge scored a 0.81 and the human expert scored a 0.77.
Exactly. It means the VERAMH automated benchmark agrees with human therapists on safety issues more consistently than human therapists agree with each other.
That is wild.
Right. It is performing at the same level of safety judgment as a licensed professional. It provides the exact objective measurement layer the tech industry claimed was impossible to build.
Which means the actionable advice for the developers and founders tuning in is incredibly straightforward. You can use VERAMH right now. Because it's open source, you can run your own large language models through this test. You can find out if your AI passes or fails on clinical safety before you push the update to your users.
Exactly. You get ahead of it.
Right. You can prove your product is safe before a state attorney general decides to investigate you or before a user invokes that private right of action and takes you to court.
The transparency changes the game entirely. A failing score you find internally just means you need to sit down and fix your code. A failing score an attorney general finds during a legal discovery dispute means you are going to trial.
Wow. So pulling all these threads together, the sources map out a massive undeniable progression. We are literally watching a new era of the internet being built in real time.
We really are. If you look at the timeline we've discussed today, the trajectory is unmistakable. It started with a 20-year-old taking tech giants to court in Los Angeles, arguing that the engagement architecture, the infinite scroll, the unpredictable rewards was fundamentally defective.
And the jury agreed.
They agreed, awarded $6 million, and set the legal floor. It proved that liability exists.
Then state legislatures looked at that floor and started building walls. Iowa, Connecticut, Maine, Tennessee, Nebraska, Oregon. I mean, they didn't wait for a paralyzed federal Congress to figure this out. They have passed bipartisan laws dictating exactly what chatbots and platforms can and cannot do with minors. They banned the casino model.
And finally, the academic and technical fields built the roof. Researchers built clinical benchmarks like VAMH to actively measure and validate compliance with those new laws, while meta-analyses prove that when you do follow the rules, the supervised technology actually works to help people.
Which brings us to the ultimate end state of this entire progression. The sources refer to it as the supervised configuration. It's a framework where the AI acts as the staff, but a human clinician holds the license and the responsibility.
Exactly.
The AI is not a doctor. It's a highly capable tool. It only does the specific work that the licensed human designates under strict, persistent monitoring.
And the most important takeaway for you as a listener is that this isn't some radical, futuristic concept invented by Silicon Valley. This is exactly how every other licensed medical specialty has scaled care for the last 50 years.
That's a great point.
Right. If you go to a hospital, you have physician assistants, nurses, and technicians all operating under protocols, utilizing technology, but ultimately working under the license and oversight of an attending physician. The internet is finally being forced to adopt the medical standard of care.
So just to recap this incredible journey,
We
went from a hesitant judge in Santa Fe who refused to rewrite the rules of the internet himself, to a cascade of state laws actually writing those blueprints, to a $6 million jury verdict proving the old casino rules were broken, and finally to an open source clinical standard that lets anyone measure compliance.
The Wild West of algorithm design is rapidly being fenced in.
It really is. The debate over whether we need legal and technical guardrails is over. The guardrails are here, they are codified in state law, they're validated by clinical science, and they're enforced by multi-million dollar verdicts.
Mm-hmm.
And that leaves us with one final provocative thought. Something for you to mull over the next time you unlock your phone and open your favorite app. Right now, all these lawsuits, benchmarks, and laws are explicitly focused on protecting minors. They're trying to save the kids, and rightly so.
Obviously.
But if we are legally establishing in courts of law that infinite scroll, unpredictable rewards, and unsupervised algorithms are fundamentally defective product designs, well, what does that mean for the unregulated platforms you and I, as adults, are scrolling through right now?
Mm.
If the architecture is proven to be neurologically toxic for a 16-year-old, is it really safe for the rest of us?
A question that might just be the subject of the next wave of massive legislation.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the architecture of the digital world around you. We'll catch you next time.